All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Friday. It is On the Clock. I am Ben Kenny, here with you on Phillies 24/7 Sports Radio, WIP, in podcast form. If that is how you are listening, we thank you. It's a, well, we're, what, 10 days removed from the Phillies season ending. The World Series ended last night. We're in a weird transition spot right now because I can't bring myself to fully think about the offseason. There are thoughts in my mind that have been persisting where I know what it's going to entail. I know what it's going to be like. But you know, you end a baseball season, unless you are where the Phillies are and got to where the Phillies got to, usually you think, yeah, I want that guy. I want them to sign him as a free agent, trade for this guy. Maybe you're firing a manager, bring in him. Like, you're thinking about how to recraft the team to go for another run. Maybe it was the nature of the World Series with the Rangers just demolishing the Diamondbacks. Maybe it's just the fact that, like, that Phillies team freaking lost to the Diamondbacks. I'm not there yet. I can't fully get there. So I figured this is what the show is going to be today. We'll move on a bit. We'll talk about the offseason. I have my priorities that'll come up in a little bit. We'll talk about free agency in general, big names that are going to be out there, maybe how the Phillies should approach it. But I wanted to start. I was on with Rob Ellis last night, and one of the things we were talking about is whether people have moved on and how that moving on has or has not affected Dallas Week. I'm not talking about the Eagles, but I think there is something there with, okay, it's like realistically, there are some people that I maybe bought in just for the playoffs and then bang, they're on to the next thing. They're okay. There are others like me, and maybe it's a bad thing I'm in this position. I would argue it's a good thing. Like it's going to take months and months and months. And especially, I mean, if the Phillies don't win a title next year, and especially with how the Diamondbacks looked in the World Series, like, I don't think this is something we will ever truly get over. Unless, again, this Phillies team, as it's currently constructed, wins. So that's why, I try to get to the offseason. I always come back to that fact. And I always come back to all of the stupid stuff that happened in Game 6 and 7, Games 3 and 4 even. Just like how we got to the point we're at right now. And Diamondbacks officials are guarding the pool. Brings you back to Garrett Stubbs. It's like things that even aren't important keep popping up. It's like a random thought when I'm going on a run. Oh, like Thompson pulled Chris Sanchez because he forgot how many outs there were. Like, what if Chris Sanchez remembered that there was one out, there's a guy on first base, and if he turned around and threw to second, and they got a double play there, he has 10 fewer pitches, they don't score a run, Thompson doesn't pull him in the third inning, and then we don't even need to see Craig Kimbrell in Game 4. Stupid stuff like that. That's how my brain works, and that's where I'm at with this team. So, that is the opening monologue to say, I want to go through why it's okay to still feel bad about this team and about what just happened, and then, as we start to move on this show and start to get into the offseason, why it is okay to move on, or why it's time to move on. And I mean, you could be in a million different camps right now. I hope that there is some resonation, at least in part of this. If resonation's a word. I hope it resonates somehow. And I think it will. At least, and this is all just coming, like literally last night, watching the World Series end. This is where my brain immediately went. Why to still feel bad about this team? Why I am, I mean, think about it less, but still equally terrible. The Diamondbacks getting absolutely crushed against the Rangers, I think I wanted it to happen because I could not live with myself if that team that straight up like is not that good, if they won the World Series. Because then you would see the Rangers look bad and then think, oh, the Phillies, all they had to do was take care of business in super winnable games against an average team, then they would have won it. With the Rangers, at least there is the mystery of we didn't get to see the series. I think the Phillies would have beat the Rangers, but it would have been good. Like that's a really good Rangers team that is very well built for the playoffs. But number one, why I still feel bad, why it is okay to still feel bad, is that the Diamondbacks did get absolutely crushed. And they're not a very good team. I still don't like Torey Lovello as a manager. I know they did their whole adjustment with throwing balls in the dirt. Whatever. They remain an unserious team. And that's an unserious team that was in the World Series because the Phillies, in a way, put them there. Number two, this video surfaced. Awesome. Like, yeah, give me more interviews with more Diamondbacks players. On MLB Network, Alec Thomas was asked about a certain home run off Kimbrel, which, again, the situation would not have arisen had Chris Sanchez remembered the number of outs. He said that when Torey Lovello sent him up to the plate, while he was on the on-deck circle, Torey Lovello said, "You're going to go up there and bunt." Remember, he was a pinch hitter in a 5-3 game, and I think he was going to bunt had the guy immediately before him gotten on or something like that. I think Kimbrel somehow struck him out. Alec Thomas was going to bunt, and he's a slap-hitting center fielder who in Game 5 last night, the final game of the World Series, ground ball up the middle to him in the top of the 9th inning, goes right under his glove. Rangers get a bunch of runs. Like, where were those mistakes when the Phillies were playing them? That's another reason. It's like everything just had to go the exact wrong way. And then suddenly, once they start playing the Rangers, they start looking like the Diamondbacks team we know them to be. I don't know what it was. Like, could it have been Stubbs? Sure. There's something about where the Phillies are right now and how much hype they get, how much hype Citizens Bank Park gets. I think everybody looks at them like, we want to knock them off. And the Phillies-Braves rivalry is one thing, and it's incredible. That's a interdivision, teams see each other all the time. Now that we have playoff success there, like, there's going to be hatred against them. Aside from that, go across baseball. Like, all the other teams are saying, why the hell are they loved? And we're a good team, and we're not. And I think that's why you see maybe an extra level of sharpness. Now, the World Series should bring that out, but, I mean, man. And Game 1 of the World Series, you know what happened? Diamondbacks had a lead. Paul Sewald's up, who somehow is striking out Trey Turner with fastballs, 94-mile-an-hour meatballs down the middle, is striking out Trey Turner with Kyle Schwarber on second base after the whole Game 4 Alec Thomas disaster. Now, suddenly, he's getting shelled. Corey Seager's taking him deep to tie the game in the 9th inning. Suddenly, everybody except Ginkle, who I deeply respect, cannot say enough good things about Ginkle. I don't even know his first name. Kevin? Andrew? Whatever. Everybody except him, suddenly, they run this bullpen game. They get crushed. Manaply's getting killed. And Sewald, who was looked like prime Mariano Rivera against the Phillies, he's getting hit. So all these things that are happening now making me more mad. But I will say, they all are kind of temporary, where this is, again, it was a reignition. The World Series was a very toxic reignition of the feelings coming out of the loss to Arizona, the Phillies' thoughts. And, yeah, maybe there were a couple days where it all was out of mind. I'm out at a bar on Friday night. I'm out at a bar on Saturday night watching the Badgers play Ohio State, and then what's on the TV right next to it? It's impossible to avoid. You couldn't get away from it. So this is, consider this a final vent before we turn the page and move on to the offseason and actually say positive things about what this team is right now and where they're headed. Couple other things, though. Things that I have to get off my chest, why I still feel terrible, and then I promise we will turn the page in a couple minutes. Rob Thompson and Dave Dombrowski also spoke. And I have takeaways from their press conferences, end of year pressers. Why to still feel bad? Dancy on my own is dead. Goodbye. Never play it again. Not only was it a World Series losing song, you get why it came back this year. Nowadays, number one, that's dead. Number two, the mystique of Citizens Bank Park feels over until they get dominant there again. If you are truly playing in a building that you are invincible in, Game 6 and Game 7 does not happen. You could lose those games 10-8, 7-6, but to score 3 runs in the final 2 games while all of your stars are flailing at nothing, it's pathetic. It is entirely pathetic. So Dancing on My Own is dead. The mystique of Citizens Bank Park is dead. And if you have turned the page, I'm sorry for bringing all this up, but it's how I have to go through it. What else? Oh, I don't know if I talked about this last week, right after they had lost. Taiwan Walker's angry he didn't pitch. He's out there on Twitter liking very critical texts or tweets or zeets, X's, about Rob Thompson. Tweets which said, you know, why didn't they use Walker? It's disrespectful, blah, 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 won 15 games. So that's great. And Thompson handled it like a pro, because he is a pro. There was my only thought watching the World Series, you know what it was? This game really needs Taiwan Walker. You know how many times I thought that? Zero. Except maybe the one moment where they bring in Kimbrel in game four. That might be it. Maybe a Kirkering spot, like taking out a pitcher early. Right? When they took out Nola, they put in Lorenzen. Okay, fine. Could have put Walker in there. But never, not one Phillies fan is out there thinking, man, it would have been really different if Taiwan Walker pitched. Nobody. This guy had 15 wins with like a 4-8 this year. And all of his damage was in early innings. So if you're going to put him out there for a two-inning spot start, he's going to give up four in the first and then battle back to have a scoreless second. Awesome. Like, I'm out. And I'm out on him liking tweets. It's ridiculous. But he's signed for 3 years. So we pray the results are different. There's a lot of hope that's going through my brain. I pray Trey Turner has a real season and doesn't, not with this weird up-down crap. I pray Castellanos can continue what he was doing and then not get ice cold when it matters. And I pray Taiwan Walker he stays healthy and is a little better. That's it. But I pray that he's not out there liking tweets about him not pitching in the playoffs. It's like, dude, you control that. If you're a better pitcher, they put you out there. If you had a better bullpen leading up, they probably put you out there. And Chris Sanchez wasn't great, but I there is no guarantee, nothing close, that says Taiwan Walker does better in that spot. That is not a decision I'm second guessing, the Chris Sanchez start. Not even close. There were other things that played in. Part of the Chris Sanchez's fault, he forgot how many outs there were. Okay, I will submit that Taiwan Walker would have remembered the outs. I'll give him that. But there you go. There you go. And the last thing, and this is a theme, and this is going to get us into the offseason. The longer we go, and when I watch Texas, even though I tried to not watch, and when I saw Arizona, the further we are away from August, the more and more clear it gets that the Phillies completely botched the trade deadline. 100% failed the trade deadline. And in the moment, it was clear because Lorenzen was not effective and Rodolfo Castro is in Florida. So you're getting nothing from both of them. But then the longer you go, the Rangers go through the season and Jacob deGrom, big, obviously, acquisition in the offseason, he gets hurt. So what do? They trade for Max Scherzer. They need pitching, they get pitching. What do? They get Jordan Montgomery from the Cardinals. Need pitching, they got him too. And he was good. He was really good in the playoffs. A really reliable starter. So there's that. The Diamondbacks, what do they need? And it pains me because they needed a lot. They needed a good team. But with the team they had, in theory, they needed relief pitching on the back end, and they needed a righty bat. They got Tommy Pham, who played pretty well against the Phillies, I think. And then they got freaking Sewald, who, until he faced Texas, looked like Mariano Rivera. More so, I think, the hitters at the plate than him maybe throwing nasty stuff. But they got exactly what they needed at the trade deadline. And meanwhile, the Phillies got a long reliever that they prayed would be ready. And listen, it helped with the six-man rotation. But we needed him in the playoffs. Like, we needed a Game 4 starter, if you look back at it now. And had it been somebody with fewer innings under his belt, or that didn't need to go 130 pitches in a no-hitter, maybe it's different. Or, just going after a bullpen arm in general. Like, they were so clearly one or two arms short. just any arm you could put in there that isn't a Ryan Kirkering or a Craig Kimbrell, then it's a different series. They were short on that, and they were short on a bench bat, on a righty, which will go into, again, what we talk about with the offseason. But those are the two deficiencies on the team, and it's two that we talked about in August and that they just did not address. So the deadline was a complete and utter failure. And I like Dombrowski a lot. I think he's done a great job. It's going to be tough looking back and seeing the decisions or the indecision, the lack of action at that time to make the team better. So in summation, I have this. I have a general blame pie for why the Phillies lost. And this is very scientific. I've spent a lot of time on this. I'm putting 40% now on the Stars completely disappearing. That is Castellanos, Turner, and Harper didn't get a hit in the games. He played fine, but, you know, the Stars, when they were needed, were not there. 40%. 30%. I'm putting on Dave Dombrowski and the trade deadline. I actually think it gets more and more egregious as we go along. Because how in August are you going to think that a Ryan Kirkering is going to like pitch big innings in the playoffs? You're relying on guys that you have no business relying upon in the postseason. And had they actually gotten an impact arm or two, completely different. We don't care about the prospect if the Phillies had been in the World Series and possibly won it. So deadline, 30%. You were two or three players away from winning. 15%, Rob Thompson. Not because of the lineup. I think that's on the players for not hitting. Not because Johan Rojas was in pitch hit four in Game 7, whatever. No, it's because he put Craig Kimbrell in when the game was still in question. And he put him in the eighth inning. If you're going to use Kimbrell in the third, fine. The offense has six innings or seven innings to come back from that, and they know exactly what they need. If you put him in the eighth and he blows a lead, the game is over. So 15% is on Thompson. 10% is on Craig Kimbrell for sucking and being a liability. And then 5% is other. Name, I don't know. All the other complaints people have. So there you go. We are done. That is why I still feel bad, but I'm putting it completely in the past. It is time to move on. And why is it time to move on as we go ahead to the offseason and the next season? This is going to switch so positive, no one's going to know what's actually hit them. You zone out for a second. It's like, oh, this is different. Yeah, this is not 2011. When Ryan Howard tore his Achilles in 2011, that was over. The era was over. The guys were old. And, I mean, it fell off a cliff within 2 years. This is not 2011. Because you have Stars in their prime, or at least close to it. Harper's in his prime. Turner's still Turner, we hope. Kyle Schwarber, I don't think his power is going to evaporate in one offseason. Zach Wheeler, although his durability has been incredible, like he is an ace, you don't have a team that's teetering on the edge and about to fall off. You have guys that are still very firmly there. You also have young guys that are ascending. I'm very confident in saying that Alec Boehm will be better next season. Stott will be better. I think Marsh continues to get better. Like, those guys are promising, and they're also on the right track. Their trajectory is pointed in the right direction. You also add Trey being comfortable. Like, it's a roster that you can forecast year to year. You don't expect to see a big drop-off. And they might not get a big move. Like, they might not go sign a Trey Turner. Yet still, with the roster, at least offensively right now, that you have, you feel good. You feel like that's sustainable. Maybe save, you know, add a bat here or there. Add a bench bat, add a utility guy. Like Josh Harrison, but good, for instance. Yeah, Schwarber and Harper, they're also still great veteran presences. And I know that it went downhill, and I don't know what was happening at the plate. You do have terrific leadership on this team. This wasn't just it's clear, 2 years in a row, not a one-hit wonder. Like, the winning culture is there. And that's something that, I mean, that I'm trying to fully embrace and be happy about. Like, this is a very well-run organization, which for 5 to 6 years, 7, was not the case at all during the bad years. And Like, almost all the moves they're making are positive. So if you go 7 years into the past and tell me all that would be the case, I would have said you're crazy. Like, this is one of the best run, currently, organizations in baseball. So I think there it is right to have trust in the guys up top. And they're not going to enter next season with a lame duck team. They're going to do what's necessary with Middleton money-wise, with Dombrowski. They're going to do what's necessary to make sure that what just happened does not happen again. So when we turn the page, I mean, they're in a great spot. They don't have any real holes, minus one we'll get to. We'll talk free agency. They have the fifth best odds right now to win the World Series. Atlanta's first. The Dodgers are somehow second. Rangers third. Astros fourth. And the Phillies are fifth. That feels like the class of baseball right now. The Braves and the Astros feel like juggernauts every year. They'll be there. The Dodgers are the Dodgers. The Rangers just won. And then the Phillies. Like, you are a perennial top five team in the sport. Which, yeah, it sucks when you lose. We are at least able to turn around and accept that this is not going to be the end of this great era that we're watching. The team's going to be different a bit. Always is. But this is not the end of the successful era of Phillies baseball. So, I mean, I hope that the experience of swinging at sliders in the dirt and what happened on your own park, I hope that somehow is not motivating, but it leads to positive change to make sure that that does not happen again. But I don't know. That's a hope. And I think they have the leaders in place to get it done. All right. It's on the clock. One other thing. And this is something I don't think we talked about enough entering last spring training. The World Baseball Classic, having all of the stars be there, or a bunch of them, with Turner, and Taijuan Walker was there, Ranger was there. There were guys that were there, and you didn't have the full team together until right before the season. And then I really think that contributed to the horrid start they got off to, both Turner and the rest of the guys. I mean, Turner, we saw, like, when he hits home runs, then he thinks he's dialed, and then he suddenly starts swinging at bad pitches. But the lack of a World Baseball Classic with, I mean, hopefully Nola's back, but with Nola and Wheeler, they're going to have some time now. Like, you hope that they enter spring training in a better spot than they did last year, because that team was just not ready to play. Then you avoid the whole disaster of the first 2 months. You don't even need to bring back Dancing on My Own. You don't need June to be this amazing return to relevancy. Maybe there's a different approach to the season as they get better at this and as we go along. So there you go. I'm turning the page. There are things I still feel terrible about. I'm trying to turn the page, but there you go. This is not 2011. It's okay to be optimistic. All right, it's on the clock. I'm Ben Kenny. Let's do this. We will step away. When we come back, I will give you some takeaways from Dave Dombrowski and Rob Thompson's press conference, as well as my off-season priorities for the team. Mike Trout, Aaron Nola, question mark. We'll get to that coming up. It's on the clock. All right, Ben Kenny with you. We are back. It is on the clock. Phillies 24/7 and Sports Radio WIP. Listen on podcast there as well. I'm at Ben Z Kenny on Twitter if you want to reach me there. I think the best people that reached me were Braves fans complaining about me calling A.J. Minter Jesse Minter, the Michigan defensive coordinator, who actually now, I mean, I should probably offer a mea culpa on this. I had said that he has done a terrific job and is a great defensive coordinator. If he knew all the plays that the offense was running, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. If he knows all the plays that the offense is running, how good of a coordinator could he be? But that is aside from all of this. At Ben Z Kenny on Twitter. That is where you find me. All right. Rob Thompson and Dave Dombrowski spoke with the media. The pressers were very long. I watched and actually cut up all of them. So I'm well equipped to tell you what I took away. Number one, Rob Thompson, 1,000, a million percent unequivocally, is going to be the manager of this team. Dombrowski expressed a great vote of confidence in him, and one that I agree with. When you have a team of all of these stars, the Harper, Schwarber, everything, they could police the locker room themselves. You don't need a football coach to come in and tell them to get up and get ready for the game. Now, could that have been used like for game 6 and 7? Maybe, but it's baseball. It's something where the stars do often police the locker room. Maybe different than football when you need a rah-rah guy at the front of the room. His tone is perfect. He's clearly gotten them through rocky situations. The players love him. And you could disagree with a couple in-game managerial things. But again, I'll say this. There's not a better person to manage this team for the personality of the team and what it needs from its manager. I think Thompson's perfect. So he's the manager. That was takeaway one from Dombrowski. It feels like Dombrowski is sold on the roster. He went through all the guys that we were talking about earlier, including Marsh and the young guys. And then talking about some smaller additions, not necessarily a big fish, Mike Trout, if you will. But talking about smaller additions, maybe places that this last team past team lacked, like a bench bat. But he's talking about guys getting better. He's talking about the depth of the roster. And he didn't seem like they needed another star, which was an indication that I have just looking at them. But also, that's something that I really felt hearing Dombrowski speak. On Hoskins, it feels like a no. It really feels like a no, which sucks. Because he was one of the first glimmers of light out of the dark ages. And now, you know, has been really productive. And, I mean, probably was going to come back for the World Series, which is a crusher that they didn't get there. And they could have used him, I mean, in the NLCS, clearly, coming off the bench. So he feels like a no. Aaron Nola feels like a maybe. Dombrowski really emphasized the need for a number two starter, which, like, this team is not dumb. They're going to go in. They're going to go get a really good two behind Wheeler. I would love it to be Nola. I think Nola is the perfect guy for that to be, given durability, given last year I think was an outlier of how bad it was. He will not be that bad again. Given his postseason performance, like I know game 6 wasn't great, but he's been a killer in the postseason overall. I saw a projection on The Athletic projecting him at 6 years, 180 mil. That's 30 per. Now, a key to this is, number one, yes, 100% sign it. That's your number two. Bring him back. Make him a Philly for life. A big key there, it's not my money. I don't really care if Middleton spends an extra $30 or $30 million or not. Middleton might, but he seems really, really committed to winning. And if Dombrowski says Nola's the guy, you know, Snell doesn't bring us what we want, I don't trust Jordan Montgomery as a two, I think he would do it. So Nola feels like a maybe. I'm scared that a place like St. Louis doesn't just totally overpay and knock the Phillies out of the park. And then Nola would go there to the best offer. So I think it's more dependent on other teams than it is on the Phillies themselves. But listening to him talk, it felt like a maybe. He talked a lot about the value and how they need a guy like Nola, but then he kind of accepted the fact that it might not be the right price. So we'll see. I mean, it's the biggest headline of the offseason. Are they going to sign Nola or are they not? The other bigger thing is Johan Rojas, obviously they love him, and he filled in a role, clearly, did well, very well, until they got to the playoffs and then couldn't hit. It feels like he might start in the minors. There was talk about how, okay, like, yeah, we know his glove is there, but we really need his bat to be. We need him to be an impact bat if he's out there in the field. So if you put him in the minors and he can work on things and then get the confidence back, that might be the best path towards him being the long-term center fielder. That was kind of a theme of it. So maybe it depends on the offseason. It depends on spring training and what they can actually get him doing and where they can get him. But I got that sense listening to the two talk. So there you go. There was a lot else. I mean, there's a lot of great work on it that I urge everyone to read. But those were the important takeaways that I got from listening to them. So, all right, it's on the clock. Let's do this. Offseason priorities. Think about it. You are Dave Dombrowski, and let's say, realistically, John Middleton just said, I will give you blank checks. What are your, like, how is your perfect offseason going to go? What are your priorities? And I'm going to expand upon these as we go into the next couple weeks with free agency starting. But just first, off the top of the head, quick glance, offseason priorities, number one, I think my thoughts on this have been clear. Re-sign Aaron Nola. 100%. Bring him back as the number two. If it's 6 year 180, I don't care. 6 year 200, fine. Again, I really think he's a guy that had the worst year of his career because of a variety of factors, namely the pitch clock. And then we saw at the end of the year a real turnaround happen. And I think that turnaround was tangible. Like, it wasn't just noise. Like, that was real. He was a better pitcher for the last month and a half. I think he can carry that into the season with what he learned from it. He's a killer in the postseason. And, I mean, pardon me, normally I have his specific innings totals that I go through. Here they are. This year, 193 innings. A little bit fewer than in the past. Well, that's not including the playoffs. 2022, 205 innings. 21, 180 innings. Like, pre-COVID, 202, 212. Then if you put the playoffs in there, obviously it's more. But the point is, I mean, he is the single most durable pitcher in Major League Baseball. And if you're going to approach a season with a bullpen like the Phillies have, with, I mean, and we'll get to how they can get better, but with, like, Alvarado and Sir Anthony and all of them, you need them to be fresh for the end and for the stretch run. It's not an overly deep bullpen. And if Aaron Nola can give you 5 to 6 innings every single time he goes out every fifth day, the impacts of that are felt. Like, he might pitch 40 more innings more than another guy they could sign. Which, think about that, somebody's going to have to pitch those 40 innings. The answer is it's the bullpen. The Phillies, I think, had the lowest innings pitched by the bullpen in the regular season this year. And clearly, we saw how well they performed mostly in the playoffs. So you need Aaron Nola. You have to re-sign Aaron Nola. That is my priority number one. Priority number two is a late-inning reliever. Like, not just an arm in the bullpen. Not a Michael Lorenzen. I'm more looking at, and listen, if I could dream, Josh Hader. That would be one. Even though he is somewhat of an ass and will only pitch the ninth inning in a save situation. If you're unfamiliar with that, well, we actually saw it happen when Bryce hit the bedlam at the bank home run. But it happened in his time in Milwaukee too. The Brewers they traded him partially. Like, he just would refuse to go into the game if it was not a save situation in the ninth inning, which is crap. Like, you're a high leverage guy. You should go in the eighth or the ninth, whenever you're needed, even if the team's down or if it's tied or whatever. But I would bring Josh Hader here. Hopefully people could talk some sense into him. Just a dominant late-inning reliever that you can rely upon that is not named Craig Kimbrell or Corey Knebel or some of these other guys that have come through here. Like, I love Alvarado for where he pitches and the fireman spot. I think Jeff Hoffman has emerged as a right-handed Alvarado, if things are perfect. But you have those reliable arms. You have Sir Anthony, who is up and down, but I think is more reliable than not, but he's not a closer. I can't rely upon that guy to close. And Soto, too. Way too wild. I cannot deal with the erratic nature of them pitching. And Strom seems like a good, solid guy you can count on. You need a guy on the end. It makes everything else look better when you get a guy back there in the end. And if the team had had one, they would have won the World Series. I had no doubt in my mind if they had had Josh Hader or some reliable back-end reliever. So I don't know who it is. I don't have that answer. I know Hader's the best one. I don't even love him personally. But somebody that can pitch in the eighth and ninth inning and close games. That's number two. Number three, and this is easy. These guys fall off trees. Some type of impact bench player. I need someone better than Edmundo Sosa, or more reliable, maybe. Somebody that can obviously fill in throughout the season for Stott and for guys in the infield, because the outfield's set with, I mean, Schwarber can play it, and then you have Pache and Marsh. And, I mean, I would like, frankly, a Jake Cave upgrade. Like, upgrade those kind of guys. Get me to a point where in the playoffs, if they're getting at bats, I actually feel okay about them getting on. Because this year, it didn't happen. And the one time Jake Cave got on, it was, I mean, Phils were up 10-0 in game two, and he, what, hits a double and gets thrown out at third? Or a triple, gets thrown out at the plate, whatever. Upgrade the bench. I need impact bench guys. Because there are going to be moments where someone goes down, or most importantly, you have big spots in the playoffs, and you're going to need guys that can come through. Because Thompson just didn't. And maybe Johan Rojas would have gotten pinch hit for if they had a stud or a matchup nightmare even on the bench. If Rhys Hoskins is on the bench, maybe he pinch hits there. I don't know. But the Phillies didn't have it. That's the end of the story. A power right-handed bat, something along those lines. You just need a better bench. I had high hopes for Sosa after the 2022 playoffs. Didn't really live up to it. And then when Cave was in, Castro was a bust. Just something, a couple guys maybe, or one guy that could fill in there and be reliable options off the bench. So there you go. Those are the three offseason priorities for me. And I'll throw in a fourth, actually, when we come back, because I wanted to talk about free agency. The fourth offseason priority are two things I pray the Mets do not do. Because, listen, the Mets are a train wreck and a dumpster fire. And everything they tried to be the Rangers, and they fell on their face doing it. And the Rangers won. So that's great. I'll still revel in the Mets' failure. There are two things that I can't have the Mets do. Because if they do them, then I get scared about them actually becoming a real team year to year. So we'll get to those. We'll talk some free agency. All coming up next. It's On the Clock. All right, we're back on the clock. Closing it out. I will, before we get out of here, I'll give you some of the key dates to watch this offseason. Well, obviously, aside from Fridays when the show drops, dates to watch when it comes to players and when they will be moved, when movement will happen, what to know regarding that. Give you some of those dates. But it's On the Clock, Phillies 24/7 and Sports Radio WIP. Appreciate you joining us. Free agency is getting underway. I believe today, and today being Thursday, recording this Thursday night, players officially became free agents. So Aaron Nola and Rhys Hoskins both are on the market. I don't think they can sign for the next 5 days. So I think it's the 6th or the 7th. Once November 6th or 7th come, then I think it's full go free agency. But, I mean, there are some names that are going to be out there. And I teased it going into break. The two things that I cannot have the New York Mets do if I'm looking at this offseason and how the Phillies are affected. Number one is hire Craig Counsell as manager. Like they already got David Stearns in the front office, who I think is a great executive. And, I mean, he'll make good moves. But then it'll be up to whatever happens on the field. Craig Counsell, I think, is the best manager in baseball. And has been for some time. The problem is he's been totally strapped in Milwaukee with, I mean, flat out bad rosters and bad bullpens. And he has literally pieced that thing together, gotten that team to the playoffs. Like, more often than not, he is a phenomenal, phenomenal manager. And if you put him in New York and you give him top talent, like, look out. Then you're talking about a division with Atlanta, who might be the favorite, Philly, who's number two, and kind of is the top dog, having beaten Atlanta twice, and then the Mets are actually good. And that's not even counting the Marlins, who obviously were in the playoffs this year. So Craig Counsell going to New York, that's number one. Number two is I cannot have them sign Shohei Ohtani. He's number one on every list of every free agency preview, everything you go to. Obviously, the Angels are a train wreck. Like, he's gone from the Angels. And I want him on the East Coast to watch him play more. It'd be awesome to stop by anywhere. Be like, oh, yeah, Shohei is pitching tonight. That would be great. I cannot have him sign with the Mets. Cannot have it. Because then you're talking about him as the best pitcher and hitter in baseball, maybe, or top three in both. Pair him with all the other things the Mets could have going on. Like right now, it looks like the Mets will suck next year. And then take another year, 25, they might be great. Shohei Ohtani going there changes all that in a second. So if they get counsel in Ohtani, consider me somewhat worried about the Mets. So that's number one on the list of the free agency. But also that is, I mean, one of the top offseason priorities. Keep those two away from the Mets at all costs, please. After Ohtani, there is Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I think I drilled that. A Japanese pitcher who is looking like he's going to enter the open market. Talked about like he's going to be really good. Kodai Senga was on the Mets last year as a rookie, came over from Japan. He was a really good pitcher all season. Although the team itself kind of stunk, Kodai Senga's good, man. Now, he had, honestly, he gave the Diamondbacks a game plan for how to beat the Phillies. He was throwing the forkball over and over and over again. He went like 8 shutout innings with 13 strikeouts. So, apparently, the next guy, Yamamoto, is coming over from Japan. Apparently, he's going to be good. So, they've listed the Dodgers, the Mets, and the Red Sox as possible landing spots. But it's Steven Cohen. You know he's going to spend a lot of money. You just, as a Phillies fan, hope he spends it stupidly like he has very recently. Then there's Blake Snell. So it's interesting because when we talk about whether to re-sign Nola, I think Blake Snell is going to get more than him. And as I pull it up, I believe he's younger than Nola. He's 30. Aaron Nola might be 29, so they might be the same age. They're both 30. Nola has him by 150, so like half a year, whatever. They're the same age. But this is a guy, when I talk about like sheer dominance in innings, like he'll bring that to you, but he won't bring volume as much. He might win Cy Young this year. He had a 2.25 in 180 innings, and I mean, this guy strikes out 11 guys in 5, and then you take him out of the game. I think Blake Snell is a phenomenal, phenomenal pitcher. And it's not a bad option to have. But for what the Phillies need, I think Nola fits it better. But he's ranked ahead of Nola. I mean, he'll get more money, especially if he wins the Cy Young. It's not as if, like, he had a career year in a contract year. Nola obviously did not. Cody Bellinger is up there from the Cubs. Guy that many talked about at the deadline for the Phils. Josh Hader, who I talked about. Then there's an old crop of J.D. Martinez and Sonny Gray. I don't know where the Phils go find their bench bats or their late-inning relief guy. But, I mean, there are options out there. But at the top, I mean, you're talking about the best player in baseball is available, Shohei. Another great Japanese pitcher who's coming over, or that people think will come over. And then, like, some top-end, top-of-the-rotation starters. So it's a good thing that if Aaron Nola does get priced out, the Phils have some options. But it feels like the Dodgers left some money on the table. It feels like the Dodgers are going to take swings because they lost in the playoffs because of their lack of pitching and because Betts and Freeman just totally disappeared when they got to Arizona. But the Dodgers could go get Shohei. There's no way he's going back to the Angels, but talk about a West Coast team like the Giants. I don't know. Keep him away from the Mets. And then, yeah, let the Dodgers spend their money. I can't concern myself with the Dodgers. It's weird. The thing that I concern myself the most with the Phillies right now is kind of themselves. Given the fact that they've beaten Atlanta twice in a row, given the fact that I've watched the Dodgers play in the playoffs forever. Like, they're the Dodgers. I don't think Houston will be as good next year as they've been. Like, Texas could be good, whatever. If they get to the World Series, the next time they do, I think they win. But there's a weird thing with pressure and maybe themselves getting in their own way. That's the concerning part for me, weirdly. It's not another team. It's more so, can they just show up and take care of business? Because they're better than all these teams. And as we saw, like, there's a real chance they don't. It's happened where they don't. So, there you go. All right, let's do this. It's on the clock. We'll talk free agency dates. We'll get you set. There's a countdown to opening day that we're going to do on this show. That's going to start coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's on the clock. All right, we're back closing it out. Ben Kenny on the clock. Again, at Ben Z Kenny on Twitter. Find me there. If you listen on the podcast feed, check out all the Phillies 24/7 shows. I'm curious to see where everyone's going to land on this because I know we're going to, I think we will talk about Mike Trout on WIP in the next couple months. I might hit that next week. I think that's going to be next week's show. Should the Phillies trade for Mike Trout? Or what should the big ticket move be? I would prefer, I mean, obviously, you would prefer Juan Soto. He's a better player at this point. But does Trout fit on the team? It's an interesting thought. And I'd love to talk about, we're going to talk about that next week. Just brace yourself, because that's going to be a thing this summer, whether we like it or not. I mean, well, not this summer, this winter, when he shows up at the Eagles games. People are going to talk about the Phillies trading for Trout. Like it's, what, 2019, 2018? Free agent dates. Today, as I mentioned, players are free agents. There's a lot of qualifying offer, you know, procedural crap that goes on for a while. The biggest dates, I mean, free agency begins November 6th. And then, I mean, it really could be any time. We've seen it happen at any time where these guys sign. You do have owners meetings and the GM meetings where a lot of things get together. Things possibly happen. Those are coming up as well. November 14th is the qualifying offer reject / accept deadline. I mean, obviously they're with Nola, it's going to be rejected. You're talking about a guy that's going to get a lot of money over a lot of years. And then mid-February, spring training. It's just weird to say we are today 147 days away from MLB opening day, the Braves and the Phillies. Now, a terrible note I'm going to leave you on today, because as you could tell, still not happy about what happened almost a week ago. The Phillies, the last 3 years, have started their season against the eventual World Series champions. 2021, they started against Atlanta. 2022, they started against Houston, remember. And then 2023, this year, they started in Texas. So if that is any indication, the Braves are going to win it all next year. So there you go. We're going to leave you on that. As always, appreciate you listening. Do all the things you do with the podcast. Subscribe. Follow me on Twitter. All of that. We'll talk to you next week. It's on the clock.